So last week, Panzerism 1 was the harder you work, the luckier you get, Matt. While you were on vacation, we were talking about hard work.
It all started with a rumor, a whisper about a private WhatsApp chat where nine-figure entrepreneurs swapped insights, information, and deals behind closed doors. And now, for the first time ever, these operators are pulling back the curtain on their clandestine world right here on this podcast. You're about to witness something truly remarkable. A glimpse into the minds and businesses of the world's most successful operators. So sit back, relax, and stay glued to your headphones. The chat is about to begin.
Welcome back to the Operators Podcast. It's me, Jason, and Matt this week. Mike's on vacation. Matt just came back. That's why he's looking so fit, tan, and sexy. What's up, Mr. Trashman? How you doing?
I am good. I am good to be back. It's nice to see your faces. And yeah, I was doing stupid shit in the desert. So it's nice to be like back on solid ground.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about a lot of topics this week. We're going to talk about how you actually disconnect to take a vacation, because I've known you this year. You've taken two vacations at least, right?
I do that. Like 3-4 day ones, so I can get into that, how I do this. Yeah.
Awesome. We're going to talk about org structure. We're going to talk about the Panzerism of the week. Believe it or not, Jason has more knowledge to share. So Jason, I'm very excited to dive into that with you. Do you want to give people a preview of what that's going to look like?
We're going to talk about negotiation.
Dude, in such a calm voice.
He says it like an assassin. He's like, we're going to negotiate, motherfuckers. Then we're going to have the North Beam Power Minute, where Matt tells you why you need North Beam and he convinces you to pay for it. And then we're going to talk about some topics of the week. So let's dive into it. Matt, I think you had the first question. So what's going on?
Dude, I want to dig into this org structure thing. I think, Jason, I know you would agree. Sean, you are a strange and unique beast. Your org structure is like God tier cool. So why don't we start with you? And then Jason, I'd love to hear how you guys are structured as well. But Sean, how your team is built out, because I know you've teased it in previous episodes a little bit. I'd just like to get you to go a bit deeper. What's your team look like, the level below them, and how's the company organized?
Yeah, so currently I am the only employee and I do everything. No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking. It feels like that sometimes though, right guys? So yeah, you know, I come from the agency world, right? And in the agency world, I think there's just more individual contributors, right? Like people managers or function managers in agencies, like they're typically leading like calls or whatever, right? Like they're still client facing to some degree. Everyone is basically an IC. And I've never ran a company as big as Ridge, right? We're a family business. No one at Ridge has run a company as big as Ridge, right? So we've had to kind of build our systems out for ourselves. And it probably used to be more of a clusterfuck. When we are in person, right? You can kind of just like muscle and relationship your way through without having to have a real org chart. But when the pandemic hit, we went online, like we had to actually, you know, fix some problems with the business. So we basically have four tiers with inside the company, right? So we have an executive tier, which is me, Connor, our original co-founder, Daniel. He's our chief product officer. We have a chief merchandising officer. And like, these are the people who are running entire divisions of the company. Noticeably absent from that list is a chief operations officer. We had a VP of ops who we fired or we parted ways with mutually. And we've basically rolled ops into merchandising, which is really brand new. I mean, our merchandiser is 45 days into the job at this point. But you can kind of see that, like, you know, I run strategy, I run execution, ops can roll up to me if it has to, right? You have Connor running all of marketing as my CMO. So growth, retention, brand, they all roll into him. And then, you know, the entire product side of the business. I think those are the three most important tiers. I'm there just kind of hold everybody together, trying to support them. Underneath that, we have like a VP tier. You know, there's probably 8 to 10 across the company right now, Amazon or influencer or wholesale. Like this is like the VP tier of employees. And they, if the executive is running a division, the VPs run a function. So like Amazon as a function, right? Like Ken is responsible soup to nuts, every piece of Amazon. So if he needs, you know, a creative support, it's on him to bring that in. We have a VP of brand who does the same thing. Like everyone is there to defend their function. Underneath them, there'll be individual contributors. So these are US-based staff. You know, they could be, they could have a manager title, they could have a director title, but they're rolling into a VP who rolls into an exec. And every VP typically has 2 to 8 individual contributors underneath them. And then I think the unique thing that you guys are probably talking about is that everyone at the company is assigned an assistant, right? So it's, we have a whole suite of international staff. At this point, they outnumber the US staff. So there's 60, 80 of them, and they're all.
That blew me away when you mentioned that, Sean, last time. Yep. You know, the everyone having an offshore, everyone having a VA. I've been talking to our growth team about that. And that it's super smart. It's got to be executed properly, though.
Sean, do you do that when they start? Like, so when a new employee comes on, do they immediately get a VA, or is there like an onboarding first?
Yeah, they onboard into the role first, but within 30 days, they typically get assigned one. It's also like when we have the assistant talent available, right? Like part of the job is keeping a good stable of assistants who are active and who are highly trained. But, you know, we have, you know, a director in charge of email. Underneath the director, there is, you know, 2 US-based individual contributors. And then there is 4 VAs in that department who do everything from, you know, data management to, you know, inspiration and competitor analysis. So they're on a bunch of email lists and they're pulling in like the, you know, recent sends, recent SMSs, you know, they're pulling in, we have a thing called the Switch, which is like, it's like a newsletter, that goes out to our staff. It's like content based with like cool links of the week. Like they're running that entire thing with assistant staff. So yeah, like almost entire divisions of the company can be run with the whole VA layer.
I'm just curious, and before I get to Jason, I want to hear how you guys are set up, but have you put a lot of thought into org structure? Like, is this something that you spent time on, or is this kind of just happened organically over time? Like,
well, so I've plugged this guy a couple different times and I never get his fucking name right. The Macari method. It's like a management method, and I am anti business books. Like I hate them. I think there's 2 different types of people. There's people who are readers and people who aren't. And like, I was just, I'm not like,
I'm a reader. I love
Yeah. You know, like some people get so inspired by that. I always just like, you know, hate it, but it's the only coaching book, business book I've ever read that I'm like, this is going to change my life. And it totally did. So they talk about org structure, and what they really like, their key principle is like the chief of staff, right? Like,
yep.
And it's like getting into your zone of genius, right? Which is the thing they talk about, where like there's like 4 different levels of different types of work. There's work that you're incompetent at, you shouldn't do. There's work that you're competent at that anybody can do. There's work that you're excellent at, but you know, you could outsource. And there's work that like you're exceptional, incredible, best in class at. Like it doesn't even feel like work when you're doing it. And you know, here's 2 facts. US staff is incredibly expensive. My average salary is probably over $100,000, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm hiring them because they're smart, they're good, they're talented, right? I need them to be in their zone of genius as much as possible. So anything that falls into 1, 2, or 3, they need, that work needs to get done. And that's where the VA staff comes in. So we didn't really think about it. It kind of fell into place. The other key management thing that I follow is that nobody should have more than 6 direct reports. You can't advance somebody's career when there's 8 of them or 10 of them or 12 of them. There's just too many fucking people. So I only let 6 people roll up into me. I only let 6 people roll up into them. And that's why we created these like exact VPs, ICs, and then, you know, VAs. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the way we structure. But I'd love to hear from you guys.
Sean, yeah, I want to get to Jason. Your VA structure. I have a question on the VA structure, Sean, and then we can hop into mine. Pre-pandemic, did everyone have a VA, or did that happen post, like with you guys really going fully remote?
We've always had international staff a part of our business, right? Like we've always been global and abroad. No, it was five across the company or seven across the company. When the pandemic hit and everything became remote, you have to adopt remote first workforces. And then this is one of the tools that gets unlocked. If you had an in-person workforce and you were trying this, it wouldn't fucking work. Like, and that's because, you know, going back to the episode with Steven, he's like, some of the best things about in-person work are the one-off conversations, the bumping into each other, the rubbing elbows, the sharing, the osmosis, as people call it. And I believe that's true and that's super valid. The problem with that is, it won't be captured in a remote environment, right? We are so, it happens on a call. There's someone taking notes. It gets put into Notion. There's action items attached to it. And, you know, we started hiring VAs because I'm like, I want somebody on every fucking call. It's like, and I want them tagging the next person to do. And that kind of unlocked this whole structure. So it's maybe 3 years old for us at this point. But I do think it's the reason why we're able to have $2 million per US employee or whatever we have, right?
Yeah.
You know, pushing for three, where that used to break the business. Now, like, it feels scalable.
Hmm. Jason, I'd love to hear from you and how your company's set up. I love this topic. I'm an organization nerd.
I'm the opposite. I hate org charts, Matt. I hate them. Actually, I'm going to talk about my old boss later when we talk about negotiation, but one of the things that he hated titles, because we were in investment banking, and like if you give people titles, that's how they get poached, and they just go and people figure out where they are and they just poach them. And so we hated org charts and titles, but now we need them. So, I mean, basically we're pretty plain vanilla. We have a C-suite. We have our VP of product that reports to Danny. I'll go into the C-suite in a minute. We have our growth team. We have our roadshow team, which is a big beast. Matt, you know about that. You guys started your own roadshow recently. We have a newly minted content team that we've been building out, which we're really stoked about. I think you guys saw some of that Gordon content that we did in the warehouse and stuff. That was them. So we've got a long way to go, but really good start. And then we have warehouse ops. So the C-suite, we've got Danny, CEO, me, president. Danny and I basically run the business together. We can both kind of do almost anything at the company. We have in the C-suite, we have our chief information officer. CIO. I keep going back to investments, but we have a CIO who's like, he's a Swiss Army knife. He can sort of do anything. He could be a CFO. He could be a COO, but he's a super tech nerd who went to Cornell. And I like hiring people that are Swiss Army knives. I feel like, you know, get generalists and then get specialists later. So our chief of staff, Niles, is an ex-banker like me, and he's a Swiss Army knife. Like he can go learn anything. He's super smart. So those two guys are like on my right and left hand, or Danny's right and left hand. We have a chief brand officer, who it comes from a sort of traditional marketing background, not so much e-com, but she adds some real professional perspective and chops from like the Unilevers of the world. We have a VP of product who is just an awesome guy who speaks three languages, two of them being Korean and Mandarin. And so that's super helpful when you're bringing in product from all over the world like we are. In our growth team, everyone, I've talked about this a lot. Everyone knows we leverage agencies a lot at HexClad because I believe in getting like best in class people, best of breed. But we do have an internal in-house growth team now. We still use a lot of the same agencies, but we have our head of growth, Connor. We brought Cam on board, who is another sort of Swiss Army knife type of guy, but he's really a high level Google person. We brought our affiliate in-house because we just found the right person and she just crushes. And she's taken on SEO internally with some help, as well as some data and analytics. The one thing that we don't have in-house is retention right now. But that's on the list at some point. We'll probably still leverage the agencies just for additional bandwidth, but Yeah. And our content team is really starting to crank out some really good stuff. So we're pretty much all on shore, but we have a lot of people in LA. Two of our C-level execs are not in LA. Our head of growth is not in LA. So we prefer to get people into the office, but we know, like Sean says, you know, go where the talent is, get the talent. We do have customer service. Our customer service head is in LA with our number two person in customer service, but we do customer service in the Philippines and with mixed success in terms of productivity. But that's an area of which we're looking to focus on and improve. I think our customer service is pretty good, but we'd like it to be really A plus. So that's, on the op side, last thing is, you know, we run our own warehouse. We've got a 40,000 square foot warehouse. So we've got a warehouse manager, we've got a fulfillment manager, and we're kind of trying to find that perfect top level head of ops, or a couple people in that space. We have one who's been working with us as a consultant who's doing a pretty good job. Yeah, that's about it, Matt.
Cool.
Job opening alert.
What's that?
Job opening alert. If anyone's right. listening, yeah. you want to go make some job. Money at Hexclad.
Jason, do you subscribe to this, like, you know, no more than X number of direct reports thing that Sean was talking about?
We're pretty lean, so I don't think anyone really has that many direct reports except, you know, if like yep. you're the warehouse manager, you got a bunch of people in there. On the road show, we've got 75 sales reps and two people who lead the road show. So that's a lot, but that's a special beast because we're talking about like scheduling, getting people in and out. Yep. You're going to learn more and more about that, Matt, if you keep up this road show.
I'm taking a crash course right now.
And it's commission, yeah. right?
Yeah, those sales reps work on commission. They're employees, but the vast majority of their comp is commission, and they do really well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's – oh, sorry, Matt. I was going to say that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you were calling bullshit on revenue per employee. You're like, that's a bullshit number. And it totally is when you have a commission sales staff. You know what I mean? It's like – you know, when you have a large wholesale presence or you have any sort of selling like trade shows or whatever, like if you're going to trade shows once a month and you have a trade show staff, that's very common. I mean, sometimes you outsource it, but it's 8-12 people who travel. It's like, yeah, you're not measuring revenue per employee. It's basically, you know, bit handshaked
per HQ. Like it's revenue per head office. Like, yeah. Because like if you run your own warehouse, you're not counting like, you know, your hourly billing type people, right? It's you shouldn't.
Right. It's like Apple has fucking 2,000 stores. You know what right. I mean?
Like why would you do that? So yeah, I think like I'm a big believer that org structure can either create or reduce friction in a company. Right. So it's like you guys both have like Sean, you've got some unique things, and Jason, your roadshow team is unique. Like most companies will never have that, right? Just because it's so special to Hexclad, and other businesses have done it, but you know, that's quite unique for you guys. I will say the difference between how we're set up and how you guys are both set up is I only actually have one direct report, and that's my COO. So he functions as like the integrator of the business. So like my CMO, my chief product officer, CFO, HR, they all roll up to Jeff, who's my right hand, right? And the reason for that is like, I hate performance reviews. I hate management stuff. Like I hate management, just all administrivia shit. And he's very good at it. I call Jeff my like Pepto-Bismol and I'm like dynamite, you know? So like I cause indigestion, he solves it. And Sean, I think that what you're hitting on, which really like rings true for me, is this working genius thing. I know you don't like books, but Patrick Lencioni has a book called The Six Types of Working Genius. So if you're listening to this and you want to dig in more to what Sean's talking about, that's a very simplified version of it. And it's fucking great. And like knowing that and getting the most out of your people and how they work together, that's why I actually do like organizational stuff, because I think it's a big lever that most businesses forget about as they're growing, right? Like when you're 10 people, 20 people, you can brute force your way to anything. like Jason, I know you're like, you know, work hard kind of guy. You can just run through fucking walls up to a certain size. The whole team can. But past a certain point, you need to have some structure and you need to start.
You're right. No, you're totally right, Matt. Otherwise, you're seeing that. Yeah, we're seeing that right now. We've hired a bunch of great people. I mean, really, really talented individuals. But everyone's still trying to figure out, you know, how many meetings do we need to be having and how do we,
right,
how much time in meetings versus it's a growing pain internally that fortunately we've got enough good things going on that it's not a big deal, but point well taken.
Yeah. You know, and Jason, I will say, sorry, Sean, I want to get back to you. It's, I think like certain entrepreneurs, certain operators have such an incredible capacity for what they can take on. And then that's unique to each person, right? So like, you know, Sean and you are, you guys have, like, I've watched you, like, you have crazy capacity. Whereas like not all operators are going to have that. Some of them are going to have like insane creative capacity. Some of them are going to be like mega numbers nerds. And that goes back to the genius thing. But I think like you're both set up in a way that like, okay, your companies are built around you guys. Everything is top down, right? Like Jason, it's Danny and you and Sean. I've always, like, when I think Ridge, I think Sean and Connor, knowing full well there are other people, right? But like, yeah, the culture of the company's like outwardly facing. That's what I look at.
Yeah. And so I think I have 3 points. The first, I like fiction books. The problem I have with business books is they should just be Twitter threads. It's like people write 200-page books just to say they wrote a fucking book, where it's like, just get your best idea and synthesize it. So that's my first point. My second point is your integrator role sounds a lot like how I use my chief of staff, Adam. Yeah. And then going back to the capacity piece, and I think all this ties together, is, you know, I need to know everything going on in the business, right? Like, I need to be able to see what the email team is working on, or the creative team, or the paid social team, right? And like, we've built the company in a way where I can right now tell you what the partnership team or influencer team talked about today at 2:30. Like, it's written down with notes, with action items. And like, it's not because I don't want to micromanage them, but I need to just have my hands around the beast that is Ridge. And that's what got us here. And I think that's going to continue to get us to the future. And so when you think about capacity, or me and Connor, it's like, I think me and Connor divide the business up very, very well. But the reason why we're laid out this way is because of the efficiency unlock of just knowing everything in your business at any given point. And it's all searchable. You know what I mean?
I think, Sean, that's I call that seeing the field. You know, like the world's best athletes all have that. Like, they just see the court, they see the field. And, you know, Jason, I suspect you're no different, in that like the more information you have, the better, right? Cause it just greases the wheels of decision-making and the speed that you want to go at. Speed is not like how fast you grow. Speed is about like how quickly you react to stimulus, external, internal. Right. And like, and what I talk about with my team all the time is like, you know, what we're managing is effectively volatility, and growth rate is just like part of it, just going to create volatility. Right. And organizational structure is just about how do you actually digest and react to volatility. And every business has it, man. Like,
right. Like, nothing ever goes perfect.
Oh, God, like, no.
Yeah. Like, you know, and what's so funny when you talk to a new entrepreneur with like a great business, like they could be crushing it. I have one that comes to mind. I won't put them on blast. They'll be like, our 3PL is a disaster. And it, like, they're like 13 out of 500 orders were shipped wrong. And I'm like, that's not too bad. And they're like, those 13 people. Those 13 people called us and were mad. And it's like, yeah, it's just, I mean, like, how often does nearly everything break in a fucking business? And it's really just like, Matt, you said it perfectly. Organizational structure is just the elasticity to deal with shit breaking. You know what I mean? The volatility created by growth, or just being alive, selling shit on the internet. I think that's awesome. I have a question for Jason. I know we're halfway through the podcast already, so I don't want to spend too much time on this topic, but you have a unique role on your C-suite. I've never talked to somebody that has a chief information officer, intelligence officer.
information.
So CIA.
Yeah, yeah. You have the CIO role. Because when I first met him, I thought it was chief investment officer. I'm like, oh, this guy's going to go get you a PE deal or whatever. And I was just curious. I mean, I think you explained it, you know, quite well. He's a Swiss Army knife. He's smart. He's sharp. He could be a COO. He could be a CTO. But, you know, to Matt, is there a unique executive role? I think we all have one. You know, there's somebody on your staff. No?
No, I mean, chief product for us, just because we're so R&D heavy, like product to us is a little different than most companies.
I thought you were about to talk about wallets.
So damn long, right? We've played with actually, and Jason, I know this would just like tweak the shit out of you. We've played with a chief sustainability officer before.
Well, I mean, for your business, it seems to make sense.
For us, yeah. And that's more of a like a markets.
By the way, I'm all about sustainability. I'm just about doing things properly. And
dude,
doing
you guys actually have great data. Sustainability story.
Our product has a lifetime warranty. That's as sustainable as it gets, boys.
Exactly. But that would be the only thing that would be unique to us from like a typical consumer. Like I would say like 99% of consumer brands.
Nice. Yeah. Ours isn't unique, but it was new to me. I had no idea what merchandising was. We just hired a chief merchandising officer. He comes from Chubbies.
And you were doing the merchandising. You just didn't know it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He said that to me. He's like, no, you do merchandising. And he's coming in and he's building out calendars and buying sheets and like adding structure to the business. So I still think that a lot of people need to see, you know, the first thing he said to me is, you guys are so selfish. And maybe I shared this on the pod already, but he's like, and what he means by that is he's like, because he comes from Fall Raven, he comes from, you know, like established brands. And he's like, D2C brands are the most selfish fucking brands on earth. He's like, you do not care about wholesale. You do not care about their buying windows or their timelines. And I'm like, oh yeah, I've never fucking cared about that. I'm like, Nordstrom, you buy the stuff. Like, here you go. I'll ship it tomorrow. And they're like, you know, they need 18-month windows. They need wine and dining. And I love Nordstrom's. They're a great partner. But that's just something in the D2C world. Like, if you're listening to this, there is still the old guard running wholesale and running retail and running collaborations, and they do not like us because we are selfish. You know, we do not follow their calendar.
You know, it's what comes to mind for me is like, again, on just on this topic, and I know we're kind of beating it, but it is like, I could go for hours on this. I think rhythms matter a lot in business. You know, and Jason, your roadshow team, like that is a chaotic set of rhythms that you guys pull off every month in and out. You're moving inventory in, you're moving it out, you're shipping people around.
Every 10 days and then, like, in and out.
Right. Yes. Every freaking 10 days, this machine has to be rebuilt.
Jason, you're hosting the next episode. 35 to 10. And I want to hear about the roadshow in depth next app. That's okay.
We should actually have like Danny on at some point.
Yeah, or if you for sure.
And just like get the whole thing.
Yeah.
And just go into that.
Sounds good.
But it is like rhythms, like org structure and rhythms. Sean, you're talking like, you know, like we're working with like a bunch of these big retailers right now. They're 18 months out. Like we are literally like we're doing deals for like next October right now.
We're doing retail pod soon, right guys? Retail pod is coming up. It's on the list.
Yes.
Yep.
Nice.
And that's why, because like it really changes a business. And it does change how you hire and how you build and all that stuff. But Jason, can you just tell everybody what the hell your chief information officer does?
Well, first of all, he was a really good friend and he was super smart and we just knew that he could help, and he wasn't located in LA and we just can't have our COO not be there every day. And when I hired him, one of our big projects was the reboot of our website, and I just needed someone to run that project. And then we had to stand up a 3PL, so we did that, and then we needed really figuring out customer data now. And I know that's a retention role, but until I have the head of retention. So he's just a Swiss Army knife who is very techie. And, you know, from all of our systems connecting NetSuite, we just implemented an inventory management system, which is, I won't name yet, but maybe at some point I will. And so he does a lot of those things for me. He's just a Swiss Army knife.
I subscribe with Northbeam. I like the, this like one source of truth thing. We tend to go on and off channels throughout the year. So like we'll go on TV for a period of time. We'll come off TV. We'll lean hard into YouTube for a period of time and then we'll come off. And then sort of like Meta, Google, these are consistent channels for us. So like having Northbeam for Lomi, it provides some amount of visibility into like what kind of leverage we're getting from every channel that we're deploying resources into. But honestly, like right now, I'm just happy that they like showed up and did the freaking work and helped us out. Like Seriously, I don't know how much more of a positive I can give them than that.
I think his name's Dan. He's like the CTO over there. And that dude will spend 12 hours working on a problem for you, just like in Slack, like grinded on it.
I'm with Jason. I trust their models. Like that's a thing that I can't say about everything. I trust the models.
Yeah, here is, because I talked to Connor, my CMO, and he says the best, most expensive feature of Northbeam is the updated data every hour. I think it's actually inter-hour. I think they might pull every 15 minutes. And that costs them an insane amount of money. And we call it Northbeam Turbo. You know, maybe take some product advice, maybe have a light version where you don't do that, but we use it to make like inter-day budgetary changes inside of Facebook during peak. Like, you know, let's just say Black Friday that day, we'll probably spend $600,000 on Facebook. Maybe this year we'll spend $1 million on Facebook. So the ability to see what ads are driving better last click sales in that period. Like we're not going to wait for look through. We're not going to wait for the next day. We're not going to wait for Facebook data. Like inter hour changes pays for the whole year. You know what I mean? And if I fuck up,
it's a great point.
Yeah. Like if I fuck up an hour on Black Friday, the team in there grinding, it's 50 grand a wasted spend potentially. So anyway, we do that. Yeah. Black Friday, Cyber Monday, that type of shit.
That's a great point, though. The good decisions that you make, like two good decisions, pay for it for a year. It's if you have enough spend, like you do and we do, one good decision can pay for it for a year.
Dude, that's or one I, bad I sort decision. Of justify almost every investment I make that way, right? Like it just doesn't at this scale, you're not making like 20, 30, 40% wins all the time. Right? It's like a lot of 1%, 2% wins. And those 1%, 2% wins, they freaking add up. So like, it doesn't take much for one thing to pay off, right? And really get its return and justify its existence.
Dude, great topic for next episode. Like my team is in charge of 1% wins and I'm working on bringing in 100% wins. Like I'm working on some wacky shit that only a couple people on earth know about. But if it hits, Ridge is 5 times the business.
Zone of genius, dude. You're bringing this topic home. Are we doing a panzerism next? What do you guys want to do? Are you going to rip into me for taking a vacation?
We're gonna get to your vacation after this. We're gonna bang this out really fast. Okay, because
let's do it.
We've been going long. So last week, panzerism one was the harder you work, the luckier you get, Matt. While you were on vacation, we were talking about hard work. But this one is a little bit more substantive, and it's the first rule of negotiation. It's be prepared to walk away from the table. And you know, when I was a banker, I worked with a guy called Ken Marlin for 10 years. He was a really interesting guy. He was a Marine Corps infantry captain. He was obsessed with racing Ferraris. Like we'd go to the track once or twice a year. It was super fun. I think I once puked in the passenger seat of his Ferrari. He wasn't a big guy, but he was super tough, mentally tough. And he always used to say this, be prepared to walk away from the table. And he actually wrote a book called The Marine Corps Way to Win on Wall Street. But back then, the expression really didn't resonate with me. And really until a couple of years ago, while running Hexclad, back in my banking days, Ken and I ran a boutique. I later moved on to a bigger firm, but I learned a lot working with Ken, and we were a scrappy boutique. We weren't Goldman. We weren't Morgan Stanley. We used to say clients hired us for the hard deals. We'd run a normal M&A process, but when your client wasn't, you know, a great company, you might only have one bidder at the table, right? So how do you negotiate when you don't have a lot of options? And one bidder means no leverage, right? Well, not exactly. And you know, your leverage is just be prepared to walk away and go dark. Like, sure, the other party may not respond, but if they really want to get something done, they will and come back with something. And it's actually really hard to do this, but it works. Now, when you have the leverage running a good business, you know, when you have the leverage running a good business like Ridge or Lomi Pila, it's the concept's even more powerful, right? Like, some people negotiate for sport. They enjoy the process. I don't like it. But I find myself becoming better and better at it by listening to what Ken said. It's just be prepared to walk away from the table. Just say no to stuff. Tell people your price and stick to your guns and don't wimp out, and you'll wind up with a much better result. I used to get really nervous, like, well, what if we lose this bidder, or what if we lose this person? And Sean once said something to me regarding influencer. He's like, no one influencer is going to do anything, relatively speaking. Like, if you lose one, it's no big deal. But I think a lot of people, you know, when you get that contract from this vendor or that vendor, like, just say no. Just be prepared to walk. And I know that Sean is a really good negotiator because I see stuff in the chat. Yeah. And I just wanted to get this conversation started with that and hear from you guys on it.
Yeah, Sean's
a terrorist.
Yeah, one of my negotiating rules is, you know, when we hire somebody at Ridge, we run them through how to negotiate. And like the first rule is understand leverage. Like, you can't negotiate versus the government. Like, they're going to win every single time. But some fucking vendor who needs your business, you got all the leverage on earth. And the second rule is act irrational, because, you know, too often people are way too polite in conversations. I think walking away is acting irrational for sure. Like, I'll be negotiating with somebody and I will add everyone at the company to a thread, all caps, just start fucking yelling at them. Right. And it's like, because I'm crazy. What are you going to do about it? Can't get fired, right? I'm not recommending you verbally assault sales reps, but I've been known to do one or two of those in my life. but Matt, how about you?
Yeah, look, I agree with both you guys on all points. And then I'll add this. I think I look at it like we've got about 110 employees across both brands. And if I sort of view it as they're collectively going to make 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 decisions in a year, like meaningful ones. And there's only a handful of those decisions, those yeses, that are going to turn out to matter. So like, saying no is actually probably better you're better off saying no 99 times and yes once. Right. So like, yeah, that influencer example is great. Like, who gives a shit if it's one creator, one influencer, right? And you know, whether it's a SaaS vendor for a reviews widget, who fucking cares? There's 40 of them and they're competing to zero, you know, and your value to a brand is like next to zero. So I think a lot of early entrepreneurs just don't understand that all of this shit really doesn't matter. There's like 10 things that do. So the rest of it, you can just be super irrational and tell everybody to fuck off.
Yeah, dude, that's, we love it, Jason. Keep the panzerisms coming, man. That's what the audience is here for.
The gray beard dropping a little bit of knowledge once in a while.
I thought it was dandruff, but no, I guess it's knowledge.
Where do we go next, guys? What's interesting to you?
Matt, I want to hear about how you're taking vacations, man, because I'm traveling for 6 fucking weeks, all work, all speaking shit. Would love to see how I could, you know, just take a couple of days off and recharge. Yeah.
Okay. So I got a few things for you. Look, I hold my time hostage. So for years, I didn't take any time off and it just resulted in like burnout. And I've been there a few times. And I think that's like, I sort of just look at it like that's my fault. So this year, I'll give you guys I plan my whole year out ahead of time. So like, my wife and I sit down, literally look at the year and we say like, all right, what's important to us this year personally? So this year I've done a ski trip, just did a mountain bike trip. mountain bike trip, I kind of combine with business. So one of the guys in the trip is sits on my board. One is my COO, and one of them is an investor. And then one of them is a friend. So it was a lot of like business and learning and like just getting into shit while we were riding bikes in Utah. I'm doing an ultra marathon in August. I'm going to Croatia for a week on a boat with eight families. Again, some of them investors, some of them coworkers. And what else? I don't know. There's some other shit sprinkled in there. I tend to not.
Sounds pretty good, man. Sean, how do we get on this program?
Well, I think first I got to learn.
I work hard. I play hard. That's the rule.
Yeah, dude, the ultra marathon. I'm like, ugh, I'm not fucking going anywhere near that, bud.
No, that's not bad. It's like a 50.
Have you done one before, Matt? Have you done an ultra before?
No, this is going to be, I'm just an idiot, dude. I saw it last year. Training? Like, that looks cool.
Have you been training?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're looking good, man. I'm psyched for you.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. Dude, I got the BC bike race. That was the other one I was missing, which is a 7-day, 50 kilometers a day mountain bike race where we climb like 3,000-4,000 feet a day. And I'm doing that with my business partner. Right. So like my ski trip, I did that with my business partner. We sit on a chairlift and we just like get into shit. So I try to like, I don't like balance. I try to integrate everything as much as I can. And that's the only way this shit makes sense for me.
Well, damn, dude. I got to start taking more trips with the business team. Also, I do think it's smart to plan your year out like fully in advance. Cause like I'm saying yes to shit the week before. Like literally in 3 weeks, I'm speaking at Harvard because someone just DM'd me about it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. Right. Like I can't say no to that, but I wish I had better rules where I could say no to shit like that.
It has changed. Like my wife, our fan, like it's amazing what you, I mean, like, look, you guys work your ass off. I work my ass off. And Jason, I agree with you. I think like luck surface area is a real thing. Right. In that, like it's input that drives that. But if you don't actually sit down and plan out your year with the kinds of companies that we run, time's going to disappear. Right. And I actually believe life is long. I don't subscribe to this like life is short thing. I think life is long. I think we all have a ton of time to do everything that we want to do. And I just happen to like doing like outdoor sport things a lot. So I try to like do them with people where I can learn and work at the same time.
Yeah. You know, this is something I just thought of. It's going to be a total derailment for the podcast. So Finn's going to fucking tell me to shut up. But, you know, I think all of us have two friends who in the past 18 months or 2 years have got like $100 million cash for parts of their mm-hmm. business. Right. Totally fucking cashed out. Every day they're working 8 to 12 hours in their business. Like it hasn't changed at all. Right. And I think a lot of times people grind in this and they're like, they're thinking about a cash out or a payout or whatever. And then even when it happens, they're like, well, this is kind of my life and this is what I do. It's like, it ends up just being muscle memory or whatever. Like, or like they, like if, you know, if one of the guys, I'm not going to name any names, but if him and his wife bought a horse ranch in Malibu and just started chilling, I think he'd just start fucking twitching. He's like, I gotta check my Amazon ads or whatever. You know what I mean? And the reason why I bring that up is just like, cause I'm dealing with that right now too, where like, you know, let's say I could probably quit right now and never work again, but it wouldn't be the most fucking glamorous lifestyle. But give it a couple of years. Let's say I got $50 million or whatever. Dude, I think I would just be doing this still. And like, I think my wife's going to fucking hate me. I'm just one more thing. You know what I mean? So I think I need to actually learn how to do what Matt's doing. Like find the time, break the balance, because you're stuck in this routine of just fucking on a hamster wheel, and maybe your hamster wheel gets made out of gold, right? But it's still, you're fucking grinding 12 hours because it's just who you are and how you got there.
Sean, do you have any hobbies? Other than just going entertaining everyone on Twitter, do you have hobbies?
I don't have any hobbies and I don't have any friends outside of the industry. So there's like, you know, I was listening to Colin Tamir of the podcast. They had Doug DeMiro on and they were talking about how awesome it was that, like, you know, when they're hanging out with their high school friends and like they cannot talk about YouTube. I mean, everyone in my Rolodex and my phone book is people who work in e-com. So no, but I got to look for that. So Jason, I don't know, maybe if you got any neighbors or something, give them my number. I can start hanging out with them.
Dude, you know, okay. So like not all of my friends are entrepreneurs, all of them. They're not all in e-com, but they're all entrepreneurs. So I like, even my social life is built around building business. And I love it. And our wives are friends, and like literally going to Croatia for one of my 1 week vacations with other entrepreneurs. And it's just going to be a 1 week long jam session. Like I love it. We get to play, we get to do some work. I learn. It's just like, I enjoy my life. But man, after I sold my first company, I promised my wife and myself, I'm like, that was 10 years of bootstrapping and grinding, you know, like 80 hour work weeks. I don't need to do it anymore. I could not ever work again, but I fucking love this stuff. I just like other stuff too, you know, and it can all fit together. I don't think you need to, you know, bleed from the fingers every day. Bleed from them sometimes.
Yeah. You know, it's a level of balance that, I feel like I need. I'm diving too far into the deep end today, especially. I mean, if this feels low energy, I'm recording this at, 8:50 PM my time, and I have a flight at 6 a.m. and it's been over a 12-hour day yelling at people. So
yeah, man.
You know, Sean, about hobbies though, I also think it's, you're younger than Matt and me, so we've had more time to develop the taste for things that we like. Like Matt's doing an ultra. I used to, when I was 40, I did an Ironman. I've done like 8 marathons. I don't do that anymore, but I do like riding my bike. And I am trying to get into golf, Sean. I think golf recommended.
Yeah. Just some shit, man. And Sean, you are young, but like, yeah, when I was your age, I didn't do shit either. I just worked because I loved it. And I'm like, building is fun. Still fun. But man, the other stuff fills the cup. Like I came back. So I do like 3-4 days off. Then I come back and I spend like a day or two just like digging back in. And I am like so fucking pumped up when I get back from one of these things. Like just energy levels off the moon. So like that little bit of time off, I think I get like 2 to 3 times the return on that, on the other end of it. So it's like, you know, what is it? You can't pour from an empty cup is sort of my like philosophical view of that. Do you guys want to go? Want to talk Lulu or in real life shit?
No, I think Lulu's old news. Well, I broke that news. Okay. My wife saw the Instagram story. She showed it to me. I posted it on Twitter. I'm not getting enough credit. It's all over the fucking news today. By this podcast comes out, it's going to be old. So let's talk about, Jason and Soho House. It's a premium partnership. And really, like, I had a question for you, right? We just did a partnership with, Travis Matthew. Awesome brand. That happened because I know the guy. Like I became friends with him, and we can, you know, I can work that out. But when I go to the Soho House in Austin, they're using HexClad cookware. There's dinners sponsored by HexClad. They're inviting people to. I'm curious, is that formal? How'd you work that out? What's going on there?
Well, like let's start philosophically. What we decided to do in 2022 was really invest in brand. We were very focused on performance marketing, obviously, for a long time, and sales, like face-to-face sales in the roadshow. But we were just like, we need to level up our brand. And we hired a branding agency in 2022. And they helped. They were sort of doing like the basic blocking and tackling. But then I'd met a couple guys in LA. And I was like, you know, these guys, they can bring the cool factor. They came from like fashion and that world. And they just kept getting me fired up about HexClad as the cool cookware brand. And we'd always had this philosophy, like Danny always would talk about, we're not your grandmother's cookware. And he always refers to this one photo of Johnny Cash coming out of Folsom Prison, you know, like giving the finger, and I even bought him the t-shirt from Nashville. But it was like, you know, whether we were right or wrong about it, we were like, the HexClad pan looks really cool. The pattern looks really cool. Like we're the cool cookware brand without saying it out loud. And so we just started thinking about real life activations And I remember back in like 2018, I was in New York and I went to Vital Proteins, had an influencer event. I'm like, who is this company? And like, there's just a bunch of people showed up and we started talking about, you know, later on, I started thinking about that with these guys and they were actually involved with that, doing like some merch for them early on. And it was just like, you know, let's just take a shot at doing some, associating ourselves with cool people and cool brands, because we really feel like that was meaningful for us. And, you know, they knew some folks at Soho House. We got hooked up with basically the head of culinary, at Soho House. And we're like, let's do a dinner series. And it started out with a dinner series and then them, you know, taking our pans in a lot of the houses and putting us on Soho House members site. And it's, they have access to some really good chefs. We have access to some really good chefs. And we just do like these 30 person curated dinners. And, you know, they're just a lot of fun. And it just builds a halo, I think, around the brand. And it's been really successful for us.
Can I ask a follow up to that? Jason, do you consider yourself a luxury brand?
Attainable luxury, really. Not so much that it's really.
Oh, sorry, Jason. Go ahead, Sean. Is there like a Laura Piana? Is there like a LVMH like cookware brand that I just don't know about because I'm a Philistine? Like, is there like a 5,000 a pan or some shit like that?
There are a few of those, but they're like really super specialty and not necessarily kind of getting you everything that you need. You know, you can get really expensive copper. Like our friend Jeremy told me, like he used Hexclad and he threw away all his copper pans because they work so much better. So, I think it's a premium price product, but it's with the lifetime warranty and the durability, it's really an investment the way we look at it. But I do think of us our future trajectory. I look at the LVMHs of the world as inspiration.
Yeah, that's why I was asking
for sure.
Cause I think the Soho House thing, I'm happy you asked it, Sean, but like doing that kind of play is the mark of a luxury brand. Like you're talking about, these are the moves that these brands make is they go out, they do these seemingly insignificant things. It's like, why the hell would you hold a 30 person dinner at your size? Like every performance marketer would hear that and their fucking heads would explode.
Oh yeah. And I think it's so cool. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Because like, maybe LVMH is doing that. Maybe Gucci is doing that, but like, I'm not invited to those. I don't hear about those. Like, it's not my circle. You know what I mean? So maybe I just think it's so cool because I'm so up close, right? But like, you know, I'm sure Tiffany or AP
absolutely do this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure they're doing it for like their people spending $5 million fucking a year or whatever. You know, Hermes is doing it, but that's just so fucking cool to like. Because you're in cooking, because it's an experience, because like sharing a meal is so intimate, like it's one of the coolest fucking things. So I saw those, I had to ask about it because I think it's awesome.
Yeah, you went and got COVID on the night of our Austin dinner and you weren't able to go, if I remember correctly, Sean. So sorry, we'll have to do another one in Austin. We just did one in the UK, which is really cool. We partnered with a really good men's clothing brand called Hackett in the UK. Their clothes are really nice. So, and we had actually a really great chef who works for Wolfgang Puck, did that. We partnered with Hackett on that. We have a lot of those. It's just, we just do them, you know, like Matt said, performance marketers may not like it, but we just think that there's an overall brand lift from it. So I appreciate you guys pointing that out.
I honestly, man, I think that in the digital world, we often forget that word of mouth is something that exists offline. It isn't an email referral. It's not an SMS. It is genuinely like getting people together and getting like influencers in real life to talk about your shit. Like that's the mark of a great brand. And they do it at a local level. like everybody, like growing up, like I grew up in Toronto and like you knew who the tastemakers were in town. This wasn't a secret. And when Soho House opened in Toronto, like they tended to, like they were gathering there. So if you're a brand, that's a really nice way to reach like 30, 50 really influential people in a small geography. And that is absolutely going to provide lift to any marketing dollar you deploy in that geography. There's no doubt.
The other night we ran a TV spot during, you just made me think of spending money with the Soho House partnership and all this other stuff. And, so it was really fun. We've been doing a little bit of TV here and there. We found that first we do a lot of connected TV, but for linear TV, you've done a couple of national sports buys. We did it during the MLB playoffs and the World Series. And we didn't do much TV in Q1 because we were so low on stock. And Sean told me we should not spend. And I listened. But we did run a 30-second spot during the game 2, I think it was game 2 of the, game 2 of Lakers Warriors. And, you know, I mentioned it to the chat or people in the chat mentioned it. And, you know, it's really interesting. I want to get your guys' perspective on it because we spent like $50,000 on a 30-second spot. And at a time when we would normally have, say, 350 people on our site, I think we peaked at like 7,000 people on our site. And then everyone's in the chat is asking, well, all right, well, what converted? And we definitely saw a lift. It wasn't $50,000 worth, but we definitely saw a lift in the first hour. But like driving all those people to our site and knowing that we have a long consideration period, we felt pretty good about it, but I wanted to get you guys. I want to get your opinions on it.
I do the same thing, by the way. Like, so leading into Q4 of last year, like we would carpet bomb the food network, like just linear TV carpet bomb. It's like, how many spots can I get on the Food Network for like a week or two? And then that consistently shows up for like the next 2 months, 3 months. Same thing, but like our AOV and your AOV, Jason, like very, very similar, right? Like we're $400 or $500 purchase. So consideration period is more than like a one click. Oh shit, I'll just impulse purchase $500 worth of pans. Like that's not a thing.
Yeah. And here's the way I would look at that, Jason. It's essentially like an $8, whatever, $9 cost per visitor somewhere in there, right? If you're typically at 300, you got the 5,000, like $50,000. And without a link, without people being on the device where the ad is served, you probably get 5x efficiency kicker on top of that, right? Yep. Because, you know, these are people who saw something in their home, in a bar, stopped, pulled their phone out, typed in the exact words, went there and checked it out. It's probably worth, each one of those visitors is worth at least 3 times up to 5 times. I think that's probably a win. But it definitely goes into a budget called branding. I would do that going into major peak periods, just like Matt was talking about. Like, yeah. You know, if Mother's Day and Father's Day is huge for you, I would change the creative to just be about gifting and run that same ad spot, right? I think it's a brand play with Gordon. But going into Mother's Day, you know, there's just a bunch of, Connor watched that game. It's just a bunch of degenerates, right? It's a bunch of people who are not buying Mother's Day gifts, be like, hey, idiot, stop right now. Go to hexclad.com, get a purchase, right? Like get the perfect set for your mom.
I'll give you guys a good, I think you guys remember this in the chat, but like I was toiling with buying lomi.com, lomi.com last year. Cause it was like a multi six figure domain purchase for us. And part of the way that we were doing all the math on it, it's like, is this good return on investment, was we like to spend on TV. And a 4-letter domain on TV is really easy to remember. Yeah. So now when we run TV, we see direct traffic just rip while those spots air. It's not a hard thing to remember. It was 4 letters, right? Like, and we're largely advertising to people over 50. So like just that with TV was a home run for us.
Yeah. I would love to talk about domains on the next one. Ridge was 98,000. So, we can compare notes. But yeah, Jason, the other thing is you did not buy direct response TV. If you're buying Lakers Golden State playoff game, that is a fucking flag in the ground. That is, yeah, that is a brand moment, right? If you're buying Cooking Channel, or, you know, we buy a lot of TV on like Vice or whatever else, like that's performance TV, $2 CPMs, $3 CPMs. You probably paid $20 to $40 CPMs, right? And it's flag in the ground, like brand building moment. I think probably a W, and you do have a fuck ton of visitors. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's a win, dude. I would not let anybody convince you otherwise. I think that that was a really smart move at your scale.
All right, guys, there's a podcast I like, Colin and Samir. It's really a YouTube channel. This They're is a YouTube awesome. Channel. What they do is they have a thing called the deep end, right? Where like, this will not go into clips. This is just for people who listen to the whole thing, a special little treat, a special little reward, try to boost that viewership. Everyone share a secret, a tip of the week, something, one sentence. This is to reward people who actually made it this far. And if you did make it this far, DM me, and I'll book time with you. I'll talk to you. I'll do something. I'll throw you a favor. This is a reward for making it all the way to an hour of a boring ass podcast. No offense, guys.
All right, Matt, you go first, because I need to think of something here.
I think I'm doing an email on this soon to my list. Cause I missed the marketing thing you guys did last week. We spend money on video views and CPV. And most performance marketers would say to never do that. We have a product where there is no inherent category demand, so we have to create it. And I think that it's an underutilized objective in ad platforms is awareness and video views. Those types of things. You should be there.
I 100% agree. When iOS broke, video view retargeting based on how much of the video they watched, one of the strongest audiences you could build. Matt, you're a genius. Yep.
We run 2-minute videos and we retarget off of watch time.
Hell yes. Okay, Jason, I'll give you a little more time. I you said email, so it reminded me of this. I just did an email about how influencer is dead. On my Substack, there's a whole breakdown of why I think it's dead. I think long form and even short form influencer, we're past the peak. It's just going to go down from here. I'm sure the creator economy is going to continue, but the best thing you can do as a brand right now is learn how to make content, learn how to build your own influencers, learn how to be your own algorithm beater, because you will not be able to count on distribution for any one person because it's all going to be algo based. Matt, you got a reaction?
We should do a whole episode on content. And seriously, like we should get like Kevin from Epic Gardening or like one of these like mega creators who've built like just insane distribution off of content. Jason, I know you're investing this, but like, man, do I agree with that? I think I'm like bearish. Short term, I'm bearish creator influencer. I think long term, I'm bullish, but I think it needs to shake out. I think we need to see some like blood in the streets first.
Hell yeah. Jason, end it strong. Deep end. Secret tip. What's going on?
Oh my goodness. The secret tip. I think that the secret tip is there might be a conversation coming up about why D2C is dead. If you attend an event that Sean Frank and I are going to be speaking at in May. And I can tell you that I'm going to disagree with Sean. I don't think that D2C is dead. So you got to stay tuned for that.
Oh, we should do an episode on that too. You guys are great.
All right, guys, that's the deep end. This has been the Operators Podcast, Not All In. I know I look just like David Sachs, but I appreciate you listening. Northbeam, we do appreciate the support. All right, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
See you, boys.